Okay, so welcome to Christian Bates, and thank you for taking the time out to speak to us today.
My pleasure.
So the first thing I just wanted to ask you was about your background and how you got into this field.
Sure. I trained as an osteopath and naturopath in 97 at the British College of Naturopathy and Osteopathy in Hampstead in London. And I chose that college there because I was had the interest in osteopathy from injuries that I had myself, had back pain injuries. And I decided to choose that osteopathy college because of the naturopathy. And I was then became far more interested in looking at other problems that patients had when they were coming in. And I would have back pain patients with irritable bowel and back pain patients with hormone issues. And then I started to see that maybe I wasn't getting the back better because they had other problems. So then I've expanded what I do more into the naturopathy and the nutrition and things like that from that.
Okay, that's great. So what is your philosophy around health?
Well, what I try and do with all my patients is be holistic, and the training that I've done since the osteopathy, I've tried to pick each area or a different area that I know is an aspect of someone's health. So I can look at their physical structure with the osteopathy. Then I have the cranial sacral osteopathy, so a more gentle approach to their physical structure. Then I've looked, studied into diet and individualised diet plans. So trying to encompass as much as I can, because you never know what that patient, or how that patient will be different to another patient, and everyone needs a slightly different approach. So being holistic, yeah, open-minded, not treating everyone the same.
Okay, fantastic. And as a practitioner, what would you say your beliefs are around ME, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia?
Yeah. Same as my philosophy, really. I think it's trying to look and see with that patient where they're different from the other patients. So I treat them physically, so with osteopathy. And with osteopathy, you can look at the spinal curves. And again, it's all about balancing the curve. So you have the nervous system is linked to the spinal curves. And if the nervous system is overactive or underactive, then that patient might be overactive or underactive as well. Then you have the cranial osteopathy for a more gentle approach, and then different nutritional approaches. So you could have someone with ME who's vegetarian, or they might eat lots of meat, and then you might want to change those people around. Like the vegetarian maybe should be eating meat, or the meat eater should be vegetarian. So just looking at trying to change what that person is currently doing, because it's probably not working for them. But again, looking at all aspects, is it something to do with the bowel, is it the adrenals, is it the thyroid? Just trying to be a bit of a detective and look into it, really. So everyone's different, and it's probably come from a different cause. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Now, we do have a lot of questions around muscle and joint pain. So I'd just love your take on the causes of muscle pain.
Yeah, in relation to ME?
Yes, in relation to ME and fibromyalgia as well.
Okay. If I see, when I have patients that come in with the aches and pains, then I would probably use some osteopathy because they want some relief from the aches and pains. So nothing beats it than actually having some treatment to them. Now, it may not be entirely the underlying cause, because you know poor diet can cause toxicity issues which cause tight muscles. Poor bowel absorption, so leaky gut syndrome, so you start absorbing more toxins than you should, or undigested foods, and those foods, once they're in the bloodstream, they love to get into joints, so you could have joint pains from digestive issues. But patients want to get out of pain quickly, and you've got to give them something to hold on to with that. So osteopathy is great for making them feel better. But like I mentioned before, then you start to find out, oh, they've got MEL, oh, they've got IBS as well. So then you start thinking, okay, we need to do some IBS work to help the joint pains. And you've got to explain why that helps. But once they start to get some pain relief, then they'll understand that. And then these same things with a leaky gut can cause inflammation. So if you're absorbing the toxins, the body then launches an immune response to it. Then there's inflammatory chemicals going around, and then they're lodging in the joints and things as well. So again, an all-round approach, but some direct approach to give some pain relief.
Mm. Okay, so obviously if people weren't seeing an osteopath and they wanted some advice around helping to reduce pain, what would some steps that they could take?
Good question. First of all, probably I think some exercise, some movement, and with people with ME, then the movement that they're going to be more suited to will probably be Pilates or Tai Chi or yoga, something that's gentle, so get the joints moving, because improving your circulation shifts your blood around, and that shifts the toxins around. With my patients, I'm often getting them to do hot or cold packs. So cold packs are good for inflammation. The important thing with a cold pack is to only do it briefly, so 5 minutes. So you have your bag of peas or your ice in a tea towel onto your painful muscle or joint, but just for 5 minutes. What happens is the ice pushes away all of the blood and carries away with it all the inflammation chemicals. When you take it off after 5 minutes, then you get the nice blood flushing back in, then that's when you get the healing. So the mistake that lots of people do is put the ice on for an hour. Now you've just completely frozen the area, there's no blood in the area, so now you've got no healing going on. So cold goes on briefly. If you prefer warm, then warm can stay on longer, because you can see that that's just flushing the area with blood and the circulation is staying in there, so you can stay that that can stay on for longer. Or then you can do hot and cold, and I get into hot and cold sprays, that's just quite easy. So 15 seconds hot, 15 seconds cold in the bath, spraying your low back down, for instance, and then that's the blood in and out. So I use cold packs and exercises, and then you do need to again look at your whole health and investigate, and then get some help with someone here, with either the osteopath, or if you have IBS, understand that you might need help with the IBS to help your muscles and joints and things like that.
And what about hydration and water?
Yes, definitely. Most people do probably need to drink more, and my most common things I hear is people that don't drink any water, they're always the ones that have read the research about that you don't need much water. So I find getting people to start drinking water initially, then you need to start doing that to actually find out how thirsty you are. So lots of people who don't drink any water aren't thirsty, and it's a bit like their body's shut down and is conserving as much water as possible and saying there's no water around, so I'm not going to make you thirsty because you're not going to give me any. So start to drink water, and then I think your thirst comes through. And I certainly remember when I did that, I really began to get thirsty. And then the other excuse of people not drinking water is that they're going to the loo all the time. And I just think that's not the best excuse to not drink water, that you've got to go to the loo. So yes, you will have to go for wee 10 times a day or more, but you get through it, and your body's a bit, I think I heard something, it's a bit like a dried sponge. And when you start pouring the water on it, you know, it runs off the sponge initially, and that's when you're going to the loo. But as the sponge starts to absorb a bit of water, then it takes on a bit more and a bit more, and then you don't go to the loo so often.
Yeah,
so definitely hydration. Yes.
Yeah. It's so true, because I remember when I started drinking my water, I get thirsty all the time now, and I do drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
It's like the more you drink, the more your body...
Yeah, you understand.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. So you said that you do see each client individually, and they might have lots of different issues. So what techniques do you use to test?
If they're initially in for more to do with the pains and things, then we'll go straight to the osteopathy, and then we'll find out other symptoms they have, and then I'll start looking into the more in-depth problems with the nutrition, and then I use a device called the Avatar, which is an electroacupuncture according to Vol device, and that's a method of testing the health of a person's meridians, the Chinese meridians. And this Dr. Vol found if you put a slight current through a meridian of 100 units, say 50 should come out if that meridian is healthy. If 75 came out, then it would be inflamed and overactive, and if less than 50 came out, say 30, then it's more degenerative and chronic, and there's a bigger issue with the organ. So with this device, you can go around all the meridians for each organ, measure how healthy it is, and then you can find a much more direct approach at how to help that patient. So an ME patient may have, it may show that it's the adrenals or the the liver or the digestion. But where I like it is it might give you the organ that you weren't expecting to come up with. So if an ME person walks in, you just might say, oh, well, we must look at their adrenals. And then actually you do the scan and you find that it's the digestion. So you have to go for the digestion first. That's my my favourite thing about it is sort of revealing underneath some hidden factors.
Mm-hmm. And once you've tested, what's the treatment that the
patient has? Yeah, so the machine doesn't actually do the treatment itself. Then you would test using the machine to find supplements or herbs, food allergies, homeopathics. But again, you can match the exact ones to the patient. So if there's an IBS, I've probably got 20 bowel supplements and herbs, but you can find the two best out of your 20 supplements you've got, so it's matching the remedies much closer to the person.
Fantastic, that's great. I know something else you specialise in and are very passionate about is metabolic typing, so can you explain a bit more about what it is and the benefits of it?
Yeah, sure. Metabolic typing, along with body biotyping, are ways of looking at the person as an individual and then finding the foods that will suit them best. So this almost opposite to saying one diet fits all, so everyone should be vegetarian, or no one should eat red meat and everyone should have fish three times a week. What it's saying is when you do this metabolic typing questionnaire, you're trying to find out if you are vegetarian or you're a high meat eater like an Eskimo, or you should only eat white meats like chicken or fish, or you're laying somewhere in between. And for me, I just see how useful it is more and more every day I'm in practice. When I have a vegetarian that's tired and depressed and maybe overweight as well, and you think, oh, a second, you're vegetarians. We're told that vegetarianism is the healthiest diet to have. And in practice daily, I just see that that's not the case. Some vegetarians are very, very healthy and they suit being vegetarian. And then we probably all know someone that eats a cooked breakfast and red meat all over the place, and they're really healthy as well. But some of them have high cholesterol. So everyone's different.
Okay. I know with ME, a lot of the symptoms or a lot of the issues are candida, IBS, food intolerances, and fatigue. So how will metabolic typing help with those?
Basically, metabolic typing, again, just looks at you as a whole person. And what it tries to do is give you the correct foods and the correct ratios of your carbohydrate, fat and protein to eat at each meal, simply to make your cells function better. And so if you're fatigued, is it the cells? Are the cells too clogged with toxins, or are they not producing enough energy? So if you get them to work properly, then they get rid of the toxins, then they create more energy. If you have candida, then maybe you've tried all the anti-candida supplements and diets, but maybe your immune system is low, so the candida just comes back. So hopefully, eating your correct ratios and the correct foods, your immune system strengthens, so the candida stays away, or your energy increases because you're detoxing. So it's basically just normalizing your body, giving every cell the ingredients it needs to run properly. Having said that, everyone again has a different bias to why they're ill, so it might not all be down to the diet. It could be adrenals, it could be bowel. So again, you've got to look at all of them, you've got to prioritize them. But really, number one thing is always get your foods right, because you may be given the supplements and the herbs, doing the exercise, but eating the wrong foods. And that's usually where it all begins.
So what would you say are the biggest benefits to it in terms of, does it increase energy? What other benefits do you get from metabolic typing?
Weight loss can be in there, but definitely energy, digestion improves because you're combining the foods correctly. Basically, it is a sense of overall well-being and just knowing that you're eating the foods that suits you. It's very scientifically based, so each food groups are split down into what pH they are, how much carbs they have, and even the carb foods are split down into high carb, medium carb, low carb. The protein foods are highest protein, medium protein. So it's quite scientific how you combine them, and it's based on lots of other doctors' works all combined. So, for instance, some looked at different pHs and they realised that actually not everyone should be alkaline-based, which is what we're often told we must alkalize. He found that some did better being more acid. So then it looks at your acid and alkaline balance of the foods. It looks at what vitamins and minerals they have in them, how much protein, how much carbs. So it looks at lots of different aspects and then takes your particular type and then shows you the foods that you will run best on.
Okay. When I did this, and I remember reading the paperwork about it, it flagged up the link between the diet and adrenals, and I wasn't aware of this before because I haven't had adrenal issues.
Yeah.
So can you just explain a bit more about that?
Okay. Obviously, the diet is going to fuel your adrenals to repair themselves. So initially, you must have the correct foods for you, for your adrenals to repair and work and function correctly. Secondly, all the adrenal hormones, so the estrogens, the progesterones, the cortisol, and the adrenaline, they're all made out of cholesterol. So everyone thinks, you know, cholesterol is bad for us, and raised cholesterol is not good, and we have to take statins and things. Well, it's possibly one of the most important things that we must have in the diet, because virtually every hormone is built out of it. So our diet, firstly, must have enough cholesterol in it. And then are you thinking of the link maybe between the bowel as well?
Yeah,
the bowel and the food?
Absolutely.
Okay. So adrenal stress can come from, number one, which most people think of, stress at work, stress at home, waiting for your train, you know, traffic jams, all of these things. So we know that when you have that emotional stress, the adrenals have to produce more cortisol and adrenaline, which then fatigues them. It could also be down to poor diet. So basically, there's no bigger stress than eating the wrong diet all the time, and your body then has to cope in a stressed way to that poor diet. So if we took sugar, for instance, most people understand that the hormone insulin brings the sugar down in the blood, and if you don't have much of that, you're diabetic, so your sugar stays too high in the blood. What some people, or most people, don't know is that cortisol, one of the stress hormones from the adrenal glands, keeps the sugar up in the blood. So if you're having a dip and a crash of sugar, so you've had a Mars bar, so you've gone high, the body's tried to cope with that, and as the sugar drops, cortisol will actually start bringing that up in the blood, because you can't have no sugar in the blood. So cortisol is responsible for that. So if you're eating a poor diet full of sugar, then your adrenals are constantly having this battle of these ups and downs and bringing it up and down. So that's another reason that it can cause that. If you have digestive issues, which we mentioned before about the leaky gut, so again, the wrong foods are not being digested and then are being absorbed into the bloodstream, again, your immune system is then having to come into action, and your adrenal glands are running your immune system as well. So every stressor goes back to the adrenals, so not just emotional, foods, physical, chronic pain and inflammation of joints. So these fibromyalgia patients, they'll have adrenal fatigue because of the pain that they're in constantly.
Okay. It's amazing the role that the adrenal play. And when I was diagnosed, and I was also diagnosed when I'm actually thyroid, nobody mentioned my adrenals. It wasn't even brought up in the conversation. So I think it's so important for people to be aware of how important the adrenals are in these symptoms.
Yeah. Well, I always try and get across to my patients is that the adrenals were there, if you think about, if we've been around for 2.5 million years, so we've had all these busy lifestyles over a few thousand years, so we're mainly based on millions of years previously, which is down to just down to basics, which is some animal killing us or us trying to kill the animal. So our adrenal glands are just primarily based on switching us into fight or flight. So are we going to get killed, or are we trying to kill something else? So we're waiting for the train, it's stressful, but it's not going to kill us. But our adrenals don't know that. Our adrenals switch into, something's going to try and kill us or something. So, and they control every single cell in the body in some way. So your pupils dilate so we can see better. You know, our heart rate speeds so we can run away. Blood gets diverted away from the gut, so you get gut problems, and the blood goes to the muscles so we can run away or hunt something. our immune system, they found recently, comes up to the surface of our skin. So overall it's depleted. Stress depletes the immune system, and that's because it's been pushed towards the skin. So if we get cut, then the immune system's already there to start the healing and protecting us from infection. So waiting for a train that's late is doing all of those things. And really they're detrimental if it's for too long. When we were running away from a saber-tooth tiger, they weren't detrimental. They saved our life. Then we went back to camp, and then we relaxed, and then it returned to normal. But in modern day life, we don't relax so much in between.
Okay. Yeah, we do talk about the importance of meditation and relaxation in our programs, and you can see how important that is. So can we give our listeners some basic tips to help them identify what foods might be affecting them, or the best way to start if they, I mean, it sounds like the perfect thing would be to come and see you, or to see somebody local to them that may be able to talk to them about metabolic typing and food intolerance. But if they weren't able to do that straight away, what would be some good first steps for them?
This is what I have a sheet that you can print off. So on the website, I have a diet diary which covers the three aspects of what I would try and get people to look at. So after you've eaten your meal, whatever it may be, you should really be able to get maybe to your next meal without snacking. Some people are different again, so never say no. Some people do better snacking, but some people don't. So you would have your meal, and then maybe an hour or 2 hours later, you want to observe how you feel. So, are you hungry again? So, lots of us are hungry within half an hour of having a meal. So, that meal hasn't supplied us the right fuel to even last the half an hour for us. So, are you hungry again? Physically, are you bloated? You know, have you eaten too much? Do you feel uncomfortable? Now, that may not be from a huge meal. You may have eaten what you consider to be an okay meal for you to eat, but you still feel uncomfortable. So, again, the incorrect mix has been there. And then how you are emotionally. Has it made you lethargic? You know, do you want to go to sleep? Or has it made you anxious? So when we probably all notice this, like a coffee makes people anxious. Usually most people feel sleepy if they've had too many carbs. So what you want to do is on the diet diary is 2 hours after each meal, start writing down how you feel. If you do this for a few days, you then may track down a food that you may actually be allergic or intolerant to. So it could be a particular food you're not getting on with. So coffee, for instance, makes you jittery each time. Or you may be seeing the incorrect combination of your foods of protein, fat and carbohydrate. So in my patients, I give them like a real carby type diet and say, right, do this for 3 days and then tell me how you feel. So cereals in the morning or toast in the morning, and then lunchtime would be jacket potato and salad, and then the evening meal with some pasta dish with some sauce, so pasta and sauce. Do something like that for 3 days and see what happens. And then I change them over to a more of a protein diet, so then we do protein 3 days, so scrambled eggs on one slice of toast, and then lunch could be a ham and chicken sandwich or something, but basically you're eating more protein than the carbs. Then the evening meal could be spaghetti bolognese, but half your spaghetti, so you've got more bolognese than spaghetti, and then try something like that for 3 days and then see how you feel. And basically that's kind of leaning you towards two different metabolic types. So you've got the more carby type or the more proteiny type, and then you might get an understanding of what you're doing better on: more protein, more fats, or more carbs. Okay. So that's usually what I'm trying to tell people. Experiment, without a doubt, experiment. And I'm always saying this as well, if you don't feel very well, and look at what you're doing, and then just try and change it. You know, if you are vegetarian, consider not being vegetarian. If you're eating red meat 3 times a day, then consider, you know, cutting that down to once a day, or something like that. But in general, people actually aren't eating maybe enough protein, meats, and especially red meats, because we're all thinking that we mustn't eat red meats because of heart disease and things. So I have, when people come in, they fill a form in, and I've rarely seen red meat more than twice a week. And if you think back again, these 2 million years when we were first evolved, and we've evolved for the longest time, we possibly were eating red meat 3 times a day. You know, the meat that we've eaten in the evening, we're having for breakfast, and maybe a bit for lunch, and then you're out, you're just hunting and gathering and catching. So if you consider where possibly we have evolved from red meat 3 times a day and then see where you're on that scale. Most people are miles off that.
Yeah, just re-educating ourselves to going back to war when people were at their healthiest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the dentist, Weston A. Price, who the metabolic typing is based on, that's exactly what he did. He travelled the world and he looked at the Eskimos. Excuse me. He looked at the Swiss and Aborigines, and he went around and looked at what they ate. And they ate masses of meat, and they ate the organ meats, and they ate huge amounts of saturated fat, butter, milk, cheese. And he was there looking at their dentition, and he found very rarely any teeth problems. And, you know, these people didn't clean their teeth. Mm. They had amazing arches, had no cavities. Mm. Then he looked into it a bit farther and found that they had actually no diseases almost whatsoever. They fell over and injured themselves, but there was no heart disease and all this. So he had then put together things that he found commonly throughout them. But again, he found differences. So the Eskimos ate fat, blubber, meat, and then the Aborigines were much more vegetarian, but they would eat insects, animals, whenever they came along. There was always they really wanted to have the meat if they could find it. Then the Swiss ate loads of raw milk and dairy and things. So they all had their different diets, which metabolic typing tries to find through the questionnaire. But there was a common theme, and the common theme was they all ate organ meats, they all ate saturated fat, they all ate the fattiest meat they could. So very different to how we are now. Meats and fats they ate a lot of. Mm. Even the vegetarian people, Indians are often quoted as being very healthy, and the vegetarians. And what can be left out is that they use loads of saturated fat, so the ghee, these things. They really put a high price on fats, and especially for their women that were pregnant and trying to get pregnant, they got the best fats going.
Wow, it's really interesting, and it is completely re-educating yourself from what the media and what we're, you know, what society says we should do. It's actually the opposite to what is really healthy for us.
Yes.
So
it's getting back to primal nutrition, really. Yeah.
Absolutely. So we'll get the food diary up. Are there any other tips that you think people could start with at home?
You could. I was thinking of the question, my questionnaire, which is also on the website, if you could download that and actually fill that in yourself.
Yeah.
And then that would actually hopefully highlight organs for you that might not be working. Okay. And then you could, and then if it was digestion or immune system, that just gives you a little direction into what to start to do.
Yeah.
With everyone, it's just cutting down on the refined sugars and foods, really.
And processed food as
processed foods, yeah. If it's in a packet, I wouldn't eat it. If it wasn't around 10,000 years ago, you could say, don't eat that. So that's a real basic one, but that's quite good as well. You know, how can you... We can't blame our modern illnesses like high cholesterol and heart problems and, say, ME on old foods. You know, how can you blame butter on our current diseases, because butter's been around millions of years. You know, you must look at the modern foods that are coinciding with our modern illnesses, like sugar.
Okay. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. And we'll get your information on the website so people can contact you if they're local. And I'm sure in the future we'll be able to talk to you in depth about other areas, because I know you do cover a lot here in the clinic. So and you specialise in a lot of different areas. So and it looks like you're also going to be specialising in working with ME as well and working with us in our programme. So that's really
good. Look forward to it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.